Welcome to the IFOA Sustainability Board's SDG podcast series. Launched in 2015, the UN Sustainable Development Goals are a blueprint for peace and prosperity for people and planet. The 17 goals represent a rare agreement in international policy. Adopted by all UN member states, they are cross-cutting and wide-reaching, from no poverty and quality education to affordable clean energy and climate action. They recognize that strategies to end social deprivations go hand in hand with protecting our precious environment. In this series, we welcome expertise from a range of guests, both from within and outside the actuarial profession, reflecting the collaboration required to achieve progress. We highlight the relevance of these goals to areas of actuarial practice, explore the opportunities for actuaries to step up and showcase those already working towards this bold agenda.
Hi, I'm Nick Spencer, Chair of the IFOA Sustainability Board, and I'll be hosting this episode. We will explore the value of biodiversity to society and economy and the risks faced when natural ecosystems are compromised. Today, I have the pleasure to be joined by two special guests. Gillian Rutherford is Head of Sustainability at Swiss Re for their reinsurance business unit. She holds a PhD in environmental science with a focus on plant ecology, and also has 14 years experience in various commercial roles in reinsurance. Gillian, thank you for joining me today.
Hi, thanks, Nick. I'm very happy to be here.
And my second guest is Alan Jones, an honorary fellow of the Institute and chair of the Biodiversity Working Party of the IFOA. Alan is Professor of Sustainability and Director of the Global Sustainability Institute at the Anglian Ruskin University. He is a recipient of many accolades for his work in climate finance. Aled, a warm welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Nick. Looking forward to our discussions.
Well, one of our objectives on the Sustainability Board is to enhance the actual awareness and knowledge of sustainability matters. For many listeners, though, this may be the first mention of biodiversity by actuaries. So I think we should begin with the definition of what we mean by biodiversity. Gillian, how would you describe it?
Biodiversity, simply put, is all life on Earth. So that ranges from all plants to all animals to things like fungi and the incredible wealth of bacteria that live in the soil, and also, for example, in our stomachs, that we hear about those bacteria a lot. That diversity of life on Earth is embedded in ecosystems. So they're the living systems like forests and wetlands and coral reefs, and they're our own life support system. We as humans are completely dependent on them for our food, for the air we breathe, for our medicine, clean air and clean water, for rich soil, and for protection against things like natural catastrophes, floods, hurricanes. And I'll put this in rather utilitarian economic terms. And the Swiss Re Institute recently calculated that 55% of global GDP is dependent on biodiversity and the services we get from ecosystems. Two examples that I'll quote here. One is that of pollination. We often hear about honeybees. There's many more pollinators than that, but let's talk about pollination. The global pollinated crop market is valued at between 277 and 577 billion US dollars per year. And that is a huge range, but you get an idea of magnitude with that number or that range. And the world has seen, unfortunately, in recent decades, a decline of 40% of those top pollinators. So if you enjoy your morning coffee as much as I do, this should worry you. Now, the second example I'd like to quote is around fisheries. Globally, more than 250 million people depend on fisheries for their jobs. 3 billion people depend on fish for some sort of essential nutrition, and that number is on the increase. However, the proportion of fish stocks that are within biologically sustainable levels, so fished sustainably, that has decreased from 90% in 1974 to 66% in 2017. Again, if you enjoy your fish and chips as much as I do, or if you prefer to simply observe and appreciate marine life by snorkeling or scuba diving, that should have you on high alert. Another fact about the ocean, while we're talking ocean, every second breath that we take is from oxygen that is produced by the ocean or released by the ocean. The ocean can only do that if ocean ecosystems and the biodiversity within it are functioning properly together.
Thanks, Gillian. Wow, so that's all life on Earth, the animals, the plants, the basis of what we eat, and the air that we breathe. That feels pretty important. Aled, I mean, how is this reflected in the SDGs, you know, both in regards to the biodiversity loss, and do any of the SDGs, you know, look at the positive contribution when we prioritize the sort of protection of nature? And I suppose specifically, you know, why has there been this discussion, and Gillian touched on it, the sort of biodiversity crisis?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that the two Sustainable Development Goals that directly measure biodiversity, 14 and 15, they look at biodiversity on land and underwater. But biodiversity impacts all of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals through secondary impact. And Gillian's obviously given two examples there, overfishing and threats to pollinators, which clearly jeopardise the second Sustainable Development Goal, which is around zero hunger. So if we impact our food chains, we're obviously going to impact our ability to reduce global hunger. And biodiversity is in crisis. And we've seen recent studies that have suggested that mass degradation of natural habitats has led to a significant proportion of original biodiversity being lost worldwide, with wildlife populations declining as much as 60% over the last 50 years. And at the moment, of the 10 million species on Earth, or the estimated 10 million species that are on Earth, experts believe around a million of them are facing extinction currently. And in its Global Risks report earlier this year, the World Economic Forum ranked biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse as one of the top five global risks in terms of both impact, but also in terms of likelihood.
Thanks, Aled. Those are really sobering numbers, you know, 60% loss of population in 50 years and a massive rate of extinction. So I think we have to question why, if it's one of the top five world economic risks, the finance industry isn't paying it more attention. Indeed, I think, Gillian, you're the first ecologist working at a large insurer that I've met. I mean, can you tell us how you find yourself applying your knowledge and passion for ecology at an insurer rather than, say, just looking to be outstanding in your field?
Yes, I can understand that seems a little odd. When I was hip deep in mud and water in the swamps and wetlands of New Zealand many years ago, I would never have said that I'd end up using my knowledge and skills in insurance. I didn't even know what reinsurance was. But what I've since learned is that insurers and reinsurers need people from all backgrounds and all professions in order to fully understand current and future risks that society is facing and how we as an industry can help mitigate those risks. And by the way, that's another vote for diversity, with needing people from all sorts of backgrounds and ways of thinking. Now, we've already talked about some of the trends and risks facing biodiversity and our absolute dependency on it, so it makes sense that the finance sector should be paying close attention to those risks. And I'll say that the finance sector is starting to pay more attention to those risks, and we're seeing a lot more of that now. So they're paying attention to the risks, what it means for society, and the role we have to play to mitigate and carry some of that risk. And also on the investment side, how we might invest to ensure that ecosystems are protected and restored to reverse some of those alarming trends that we've been talking about. So to come back to your question, Nick, that's what I'm doing as an ecologist in the reinsurance industry. And one point I'd like to make here is that I'd really like to emphasize that we have a very big opportunity as an industry right now to do all of that that I was just describing. We all have a role to play.
Gillian, that's very interesting. And I suppose if we all have a role, maybe I can turn to you, Alid, and ask, you know, what about the role of actuaries? I mean, you're currently chairing the IFOA Biodiversity Working Party. What's the aims of that working party, and how much of this link between ecology and economics is becoming more widely acknowledged?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So the working party was set up to help inform the thinking and action of the Institute, especially around biodiversity risk, of course. So, for example, we've recently asked that biodiversity be added to the IFOA's Regulation Board's Horizon Risk Register, so the Horizon Risk Scanning Register, because we do feel like the biodiversity risk is an important one to be recognised so that we can then work on better understanding it. And the connection between ecology and economics is being increasingly recognised. As Gillian's already said, for example, in the Swiss Re report, that more than half of the world's GDP is dependent on biodiversity. The World Economic Forum in January reported a similar number, around half of the world's GDP is moderately or highly dependent on nature. And the Economics and Ecosystems and Biodiversity report estimated that one in six European jobs are dependent on the environment. So at national and international government levels, biodiversity is increasingly being seen as a risk to the economy. And there are important discussions going on about how to incorporate this risk into decision-making processes, including a potential TCFD for biodiversity. But it's important to also acknowledge that people like Robert Constanza, who's an ecological economist, they've been talking about this for well over 30 years. So it's not a new issue, but it is something that seems to be getting increasing attention right at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. Constanza has been a leading light on this topic for decades and has published a number of really useful publications, tackling quite a difficult topic, right, of quantifying the value of ecosystems. I'll also add the, you know, we mentioned the Swiss Re Institute report just before called Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, a Business Case for Reinsurance. We analysed and mapped 10 ecosystem services worldwide at a 1 kilometre square resolution. And this has already been included in some of our tools. So we've included it in our CatNet tool, which is a mapping tool used for risk assessment and other things. And we've done this as one step towards taking biodiversity and ecosystems into account in our decision-making and risk selection, as well as potentially forming the basis for future nature-based solutions.
I think that's quite encouraging. I mean, so we're seeing some distinct steps forward in acknowledging the links between ecology and economics. So, Alid, again, if I can turn to you, given where we are in the adoption of sort of ecology economics, I'm really going to have to sort of spend some time after this podcast working on those two words together, aren't I? But given where we are in the adaptation of ecology economics, how could actuarial skills and actuaries help drive change?
Well, biodiversity is no longer a tail risk, so that's important to acknowledge. It's now a central risk, but it is an extremely complex one. So the wickedness of the problem is that complexity and the interconnectedness, as well as attempting to quantify exactly which part of biodiversity manifests the risk. So is it the first or the last tree that we cut down, which is important? So how you quantify that, especially with that sort of time element in it, is very difficult. So we should then acknowledge that quantifying biodiversity can lead to some absurdities. So I do often quote that the TEEB report, the one that mentioned one in six European jobs are dependent on the environment. So in that case, we should then think about the other five in six jobs. If we didn't have an environment, would those five in six jobs still be okay? So we need to think about a sort of systems thinking mindset and this multidisciplinary collaboration where biodiversity challenge is characterised by a high degree of uncertainty And I think the actuaries bring a unique and valuable skill set in how to manage this type of information, especially that complexity and the interconnectedness element.
I mean, I fully agree. I mean, the financial industry has struggled to pay attention to biodiversity, but I see the challenges of biodiversity at least as acute and probably less reversible than those of climate change. I personally am looking to sort of change that. You know, I've made biodiversity one of my three themes as sustainability chair, and really pleased to be part of the sort of biodiversity working party and hosting this podcast. And I also agree that the wickedness of the biodiversity problem is very suited to the actuarial skill set and mindset that can handle emerging risks and uncertainty. In fact, you know, thinking about 2020, I mean, the biggest event this year has clearly been the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, Gillian, economists comment on the link between biodiversity loss and the increasing prevalence of zoonotic diseases such as Ebola and COVID-19. Could you explain that link? And in case that, you know, we haven't yet got to the point of the importance for our listeners, any other examples of why biodiversity is such an important risk area for actuaries?
Sure. So yeah, humans are encroaching more and more into wildlife habitat. Our proximity and contact to wildlife is increasing, and therefore this greatly increases our chances of viruses jumping from animals to humans, which is what we've just observed, or we are in the middle of with COVID-19. In addition to zoonotic diseases and the earlier examples, I'll quote two more. The first is drugs. So biodiversity is really critical to drug discovery, and half of all approved modern drugs in the last 30 years have been developed from wild species. Things like Madagascan periwinkle and Pacific yew have both yielded treatments for cancer. And that's a question for the audience, you know, what does that mean for our cancer protection that the industry offers? A second example, if you think of the hurricanes that really slam through the Caribbean nations and into Mexico and the US every single year, ecosystem restoration along the coast of Louisiana, it could reduce expected flood costs by $5.3 billion annually. And if we were to restore those ecosystems and have that reduction in flood costs, that should obviously be calculated into premiums.
Thanks, Jane. I mean, 5.3 billion. I mean, it's, you know, carry on with these numbers. We're going to talk about, you know, proper amounts. And I think it's a really interesting example that in regards to the sort of protection on sort of ecosystem restoration. And I know that there's much work going on at the moment on the role of sort of natural capital solutions and nature-based solutions. But I think, you know, if I can be so bold, that's probably a podcast in its own right. Whereas here, we probably should be looking to move to some more sort of concluding comments. I mean, given today's discussion, I don't think you sort of sit here and, you know, have any choice but to acknowledge the importance and influence of biodiversity, both, you know, having direct and systematic impacts on our world. You know, biodiversity has a great value to society, and the loss of it poses risks that are amplified by our global connectedness. So what does then the actuarial profession need to do to encourage its members to address these risks and take advantage of the opportunities? Alid, what call to action would you make to your actuarial peers?
I think actuaries should embrace and clearly highlight biodiversity as a risk within finance. So it's clearly a risk to the economy, but specifically it's a risk to finance. And then they can develop modelling capability and improved understanding of the central risks, as well as helping to foresee some of those tail risk scenarios and the interdependency with other risks, especially across the Sustainable Development Goals. But actuaries are well positioned to help address the need for better data an interpretation of the limited data that we have for now in ecological economics.
Thanks, Elliot. And from you, Gillian, from your perspective, how can actuaries play an influential role in protecting biodiversity and the associated SDGs?
I wonder if actuaries could contribute to backcasting exercises. So imagining future better protected and restored areas and what impact that will have on the insurability of risks. I see this as really critical to ensuring a world that remains insurable and that we achieve the SDGs of life on land and life underwater.
Thank you, Gillian, Aled. I mean, it's been really interesting talking to you today. I mean, actuaries thrive on modelling and thinking about tail risks and alternative scenarios. The understanding of biodiversity risks strikes me not only as a necessity in understanding future risks, but also as an opportunity. Actuaries who develop their skill sets will be in demand by insurers and throughout the financial sector. Gillian, your close brings us to a powerful conclusion. You know, understanding biodiversity risks and natural capital solutions is critical to ensuring the world remains insurable. That very literally binds biodiversity to the future of the profession and all the actuaries that are working in insurance and across finance. So thank you both for your time and insights today, and to our listeners for listening all the way through. Further resources and information can be found in the weekly sustainability newsletter, which is on, you know, sign-ups are on the IFOA sustainability webpage. And the board will shortly be creating some curated guide to sustainability issues as a store of leading reports and efforts. So thanks, goodbye to our listeners, and thanks once again to both Gillian and Anne.